Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, July 24th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. We open the show wondering how so many Democratic leaders across the U.S. could have been so surprised at the rumored health issues confronting President Joe Biden. We also welcomed U.S. Army Colonel, retired John Mills, the author of War Against the Deep State. Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor Dan Haar stopped by to look at the major stories around the state, including another expansion of service at Bradley International Airport. So we start off the program today on this midweek Wednesday. We start this off with just another example. And folks, I simply bring this stuff up and it plays itself out. It writes itself. As I say all the time, you could have the best union Broadway and movie and Hollywood TV script writers, and you cannot script lunacy like this. You cannot script the great David Chase, who, you know, helped write The Sopranos, marvelous dialogue and a show that is among the top shows of all time. There wasn't a wasted line of dialogue in that series. So what I'm opening with today, you cannot script this. You can't. You know, oftentimes when there's stuff happening of a regional import emanating from New Haven, I will have Paul Bass on my show, and I urge you to check out Paul's online news outlet, the news portal covering New Haven, the New Haven Independent. Paul does a fantastic job. I can't say enough about this in covering New Haven. You know, my hometown and the little nooks and crannies kind of stories that the major outlets don't have the time or the patience or the manpower or womanpower to get to. One thing Paul also does is he posts stuff on YouTube and he interviews people for the site and also puts the interviews on YouTube and broadcasts them on a very low-power FM station in New Haven. So his latest guest, I don't know whether this was his latest guest or one of the people he's had on recently, was recognize the name Vinnie Morrow. Vinnie Morrow is the Democratic town chair in New Haven. Very, very, very influential guy. Vinnie Morrow, his second decade as New Haven's Democratic town chair. So I'm reading the stories, and I haven't talked to Vinnie in, 10, 15 years. It's been a long time. So they touch on, get ready for this, and this is no direct poke at Vinny or anybody, but you'll see where I'm going here. They touch on the condition of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris ascending now to what is likely to be, it's not official yet, but ascending now to what is likely to end up being the nomination to run for president on the Democratic side. So I guess Vinny was asked by Paul Bass in this interview about the transition to Kamala Harris and what he and local Democrats knew or thought of the condition of Joe Biden. Now, mind you, folks who tend to be center or center right like I am, we would talk about this on a daily basis. You've been with me since I came here over 5 years ago. So, right? For at least the last 2 years. And you Democrats out there, you Trump haters, you Republican haters, you know, if you listen to me, and I welcome all comers here, you know that I've been on this for about 2 years. And I was referencing, you know, largely stories in right-leaning publications, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, the Washington Times, the Washington Examiner, and those allegations were all, you know, sloughed off by the White House, Karine Jean-Pierre and John Kirby and all the press people that say, no, no, Joe Biden's fine. This is just, I remember Karine Jean-Pierre went up there one day and said that that video of Biden basically shuffling his way off the stage there with George Clooney in Hollywood, oh, that was a deep fake. That was an AI. And you and I would sit here, folks, right, and we would simply say, well, what are you talking about? So Vinnie Morrow says this, and I'm going to read it as it's posted here in the New Haven Independent, newhavenindependent.org, front page story there. And you Democrats, listen to this, and I'm not getting on Vinnie's back per se, but you hear this, and the question is, what were people looking at? What were they watching? And there's a bigger story to be played out here. Vinnie Morrow said, quote, "The frustration that I've heard from people is this just didn't happen overnight, and that he went from the most effective president of all time to what we saw in the debate. And then that interview, right? You had all those folks who were in the room, and the secretaries from every department, and the senators and legislators and the representatives who used to walk out of the White House every day, and they'd go to the press gaggle and say, quote, we just had the great meeting with the president. 3 weeks later, the guy can't put a sentence together." Yeah, Vinny, you're right. Vinnie Morrow continues, quote, "If there was a more honest conversation a year ago or a year and a half ago, then it's an open process, right? But everyone towed the line down there. And then as soon as it didn't work out, it's like, all right, he's got to go. Why didn't you know? Why weren't you telling us earlier in the process?" Close quote. Quote, question mark there. Vinnie, and I haven't seen Vinnie in years. He probably doesn't remember me. Vinnie, with all due respect, with all due respect, half the country was saying it. But the other half of the country didn't listen, because that half of the country goes, oh, Joe Biden's fine. That's just stuff you're seeing in the New York Post and on Fox News. Well, geez, how did that turn out? Again, Vinnie Morrow, a very, very powerful Democratic town chair in New Haven, saying again, quote, "If there was a more honest conversation a year ago or a year and a half ago, then it's an open process, right?" Well, yes, Vinnie, it is. But the people in your party didn't want to hear it. And maybe, look, maybe Vinnie Morrow and all the town and city Democratic chairs, maybe they are upset at the out-and-out lies the White House has been telling us. But you know what? You Democrats who may be now upset like Vinnie Morrow is, and God bless him, he has a right to be upset, you know, you Democrats bought this stuff hook, line, and sinker from your own party. Oh, Joe's doing, they say he's doing well. They say, do you not see the video we all see? I don't get it. Explain this to me. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Now, with all due respect to people like Vinnie Morrow and other people who may be hearing me and listening to this and are honestly surprised, how could you be honestly surprised? Now, there's a reason. And I criticize Republicans about this, too, and I criticize Democrats. You've got to get media sources from both sides. Remember, CNN, MSNBC, all the Democrats in Congress, oh, the Hunter Biden laptop is, remember that? That was Russian disinformation. Yeah, how'd that turn out? How did that turn out? Russian disinformation, my arse. And then you had these Democrats, well, we had no idea. How on God's earth did you not have no idea? Unless you are so blindly partisan that you wouldn't even watch a video that was posted at the New York Times or posted, I'm sorry, at the New York Post. Or you wouldn't even sniff out a report that was on Fox News or on some other conservative site. Because, of course, it had to be Russian disinformation. The laptop wasn't Russian disinformation. You remember, I had the guy on the show who looked at the information on the Hunter Biden laptop. He goes, no, that was not there. There was a lot of shady emails there and crackhead porn. But yet we had Colleen Jean-Pierre telling us every day, oh, no, that's not real. The laptop's not real. It's not, huh? And you had Joe Biden in 2020. He would have this letter signed by 20, blah, 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 blah. I got 20 or 25 former intelligence experts saying the laptop is not real. Well, how'd that work out, Mr. President? So with all due respect, Vinnie Morrow and you Democrats, and God bless you, you participate in the greatest process in the world, but spare me. Vinnie Morrow said it right here, quote, but everybody towed the line down there, and then as soon as it didn't work out, it's like, all right, he's got to go. Why didn't you know? Why weren't you telling us earlier in the process? Well, Vinnie, as the New York Post, I know Democrats don't like the Post, as the New York Post reported yesterday, there were people around Joe Biden trying to tell people 2 years ago he can't run again. But there's a takeover. God, this is going to be, this election is going to be a retaking of the Democratic Party by the Obama bunch. And they did their best to quell any dissension. This is mind-boggling. The next time I hear I swear, get me the duct tape. When I hear Democrats say, well, we didn't know. We didn't realize. You know why you didn't realize? Because you don't watch anything else than MSNBC or CNN, or you read nothing else than the New York Times. I mean, for God's sake, even the Washington Post had stories a year ago saying, hey, is Biden slowing down? You think, Clyde? Rich in Milford starts us off. Rich, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, Rich. What's up?
I'm just still kind of processing everything that's been happening. It's like so many different stories happening.
Yeah.
The story that Biden was deteriorating wasn't like a hidden story. Democrats acting like they're just finding this out now is just completely... I mean...
We've been talking about this,
like,
Rich, for 2 years. We've been talking about this.
They joked about it on Saturday Night Live. Hardly a right wing.
Exactly.
I mean, and they joked about Kamala Harris being the border czar too.
Oh.
I mean, if you want to check that, because supposedly none of that really happened. All of our memories are fake from a few years back. You know, back when everybody was saying that Kamala Harris was supposed to be in charge of the border. So now she wasn't really supposed to be in charge of the border. So, but I mean, it's. People are basically in the mindset, it's Yankees versus Red Sox.
Yeah.
If your team does it,
that's good.
If the other team does it, it's bad.
Yeah.
And that's destroying America because you don't have people just saying, it doesn't matter if my team does it or not. This is wrong, period, the end.
Absolutely,
end of
absolutely.
And you have everybody just scrambling and low-informed voters just watching television. I mean, Kamala Harris is going to be... I mean, I predict she's going to get, like, the most votes, like, maybe 82 million.
Yeah.
I mean, this time, because and the Republicans also are getting a little bit too cocky thinking that.
Yes.
They don't have to worry about Kamala Harris. I mean, they don't realize how many people absolutely hate to their marrow Donald Trump.
Absolutely. And, Rich, I do have to run. Thank you for the call. But that's right. It's an old... I don't care whether you're on the far right or far left. Please, for the love of God, stop living in an alternate universe. Right now, let's talk national security amid this flux in what's going on in D.C. And President Biden is set to announce, address the nation tonight, I believe it's 8 o'clock Eastern time, on his decision to step aside from his reelection bid. A lot of people say, hey... Maybe he should resign gracefully and allow Kamala Harris to become president here just for some continuity of leadership. Our next guest is a national security professional with service in five different areas: the Cold War, the Peace Dividend, the War on Terror, World in Chaos, and now the Great Power Showdown. He's a former director of cybersecurity policy, strategy, and international affairs at the Department of Defense. He's a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. His book is called War Against the Deep State. Army Colonel, retired John Mills is with us. Colonel Mills, hi, it's Paul at WICC in Connecticut. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, how are you doing? An honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Now, you have a piece that's posted here in several areas, including the Gateway Pundit here, and the title of the piece, Who is Providing Presidential Leadership with the Nuclear Football? Why did you write that, sir, and do you think there's a sufficient continuity in the White House now with all the upheaval that's going on as far as America's national security is concerned?
Well, thank you, Paul. I wrote that. It was after the first debate, so June 27th, but before the current proceedings. We can't even, who knows what happens in the next 5 minutes here. But, I mean, it goes back to the basic question here. A presidential responsibility is control of the nuclear codes in the nuclear football. And even back then, after it was patently obvious, we had a president who had cognitive issues. Now he stepped aside. We absolutely need to know who. I mean, it makes it. So I wrote this before he stepped aside. But bottom line, if somebody is not fit to run on a campaign. With all due respect, I don't think they're fit to be president and be the one responsible for the nuclear codes. And I go through that article, in the past, how we used to spend enormous resources assessing the psychology profile, nuances, medical status of foreign leaders, kind of a lost art form, not really done as much anymore that I'm aware of, but China and Russia, you bet they spend time, and they're going, we don't even know if the United States has a leader right now. So this is a very serious matter. I don't mean this is a cheap shot in any way on President Biden. This is a reasonable, rational concern. And now that he stepped aside, I think the prudent and wise thing to do, if they cared about the American people, was not only step down from the campaign, resign from office, and so Kamala gets the joy of both running a campaign and being president. Welcome to the real world.
Yeah, and Colonel, I mentioned that on my show several times, and believe me, I have no military background, but even a guy like me, even some schlub like me knows, hey, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, the other people who would be ne'er-do-wells against us. I mean, they have experts too, right? I mean, I'm sure in Beijing and in Tehran and in Moscow, you know, they're looking here and asking their doctors, right? Hey, President Biden, what do you make as what's going on here and who's controlling things in the White House? I would assume they are, right?
Oh, you bet they assign massive resources to this topic, numerous analysts that are just poring over every possible detail to ascertain. And I think the only conclusion is the United States doesn't have a leader right now that is functional. I mean, this is a reasonable, rational question. And again, if Biden is unfit to run in a campaign, I would suggest for the good of the American people, he's not fit to actually run the presidency and really be the person who makes the legal precedent, legal framework for launch, nuclear launch. We put a huge amount of responsibility in somebody. And right now, this person has stepped back down from the campaign because of their essentially their cognitive abilities. Okay, then they need to do the right thing and all step down all the way.
Colonel, you and I both know, and I know a lot of people probably do who were smart enough to read about this, there's no such thing as the button, right? And that's a colloquialism, you know, the president, no matter what party, they ultimately have their finger on the button. But what is the actual chain of command here? And are there any... are there any protocols here in place, not just for Joe Biden, but for any president, past, present, and future, who may have to make an ultimate decision either on nuclear weapons or, for that matter, major troop movements and attack plans? How does that chain of command actually work, briefly?
Okay, two totally different topics here, nuclear versus a command authority in a conventional war. So I think let's just focus on the nuclear aspect. I go through the article, the legal framework and the whole topic area. But the reality is we bestow great confidence in that singular person who is encumbering the position of the president. Huge when it comes to nuclear. Now, our nuclear force is shriveled and nothing like it used to be. I mean, we at one point in time in the late 60s, our peak was about 35,000 warheads. Wow. Right now, we have roughly 1,500 strategic warheads. And roughly maybe 2,000 tactical. That number is the exact number is classified. And there's warheads that are being refurbished, that are being worked, that are in storage, that are being decommissioned. So it's a little that's not a publicly available number, but this is great concern. And China and Russia are in full blown cahoots to topple America. Now, right before the NATO conference, NATO went after China hard. Really, essentially, the first time NATO has identified China as the real issue. Russia would not be in Ukraine anymore. Russia would have collapsed at this point in time if it is not for all the support that China has provided. Mm. And it's been identified. Russia is a colony of China at this point in time. Iran, North Korea, and Venezuela are colonies of China. And China was just apoplectic with being called out. So they are definitely they are looking to take the NATO rightfully. I mean, it's about 3 years later than they should have. But NATO essentially called out China and said that the no limits agreement to topple America is the issue and the threat to stability in the world today. China tends to topple America. And right now they are looking at Biden and they are calculating things and they're going, wow. It's not clear that the president, that the United States even has a functional leader, period, at this point in time.
Retired Army Colonel John Mills is the guest. Name of the book, The War Against the Deep State. Colonel, tell us a little about that book and why would you want people to go out and pick it up and read it?
Well, this is my second book. The first book was The Nation Will Follow. It was about my time finding myself in the middle of the coup against candidate and President Trump. This one is about the foundation of the mass surveillance system in America, originally created lawfully. It's been perverted, spun out of control, and has been the reason we have now seen the rise of the unlawful fourth, fifth, and sixth branches of government. It's a great read. I was personally involved, material witness, and I think people really want to understand the tyranny of what we are operating under in America with the mass surveillance system that's been weaponized by the fourth, fifth, and sixth branches of government.
What, Colonel, do you see is the general state of our military? Listen, I have all kinds of respect for guys and gals like you, past, present, and future, who are in the military either for a short time or career men and women who really want to protect this country. But, you know, Colonel, a lot of the stuff I hear on both sides of the aisle, because I tend to try to get enough news sources for a complete look here, I kind of see this unified theme that we really need a, if not a complete reboot again, we really need to get things up to snuff again. Is that true? Is our military in a bad shape, a decent shape? What needs to be done here?
Bad shape. Recruiting and retention is horrible. Worst shortages ever in recruiting and retention. Now, the Marines have essentially met their milestones, but even that, I think, is very, very precarious. They're a much smaller service. The bottom line is wokeism, DEI, CRT is real. It is toxic. It is cancerous. We need to remove leaders who advocate this because this essentially is talk about racist. This is one of the most DEI, CRT is more racist than anything else. You essentially say anybody who is white, who is male, who is, I guess you would call it straight, who believes in the family, who believes in traditional America, who believes in the Constitution, except once you go through this, actually 90% of America actually fits into all these things identified by DEI, CRT that are bad. You've just reduced the recruiting pool immensely. You're a Latino. You're married. You believe in a family. Do you feel comfortable joining the military? You're Black American. You have a faith foundation. Do you think you feel welcome in the military? I mean, this is psychotic. And then they can't figure out why people do not want to join or stay in the military. Well, they've just said because they've created so many factors. 90% of America fits into one or more of these factors. Hey, I'm not welcome, according to them, I'm not welcome in the military. Why join? So we have a huge problem. Our industrial base is not spinning up. We spend 3.5% of GDP on military. Mm-hmm. To be honest, with China and Russia, we need to go to 5%. And that's Senator Wicker's number just from a few weeks ago. We got to go to 5%. And NATO was cheering, hey, most of our countries are 2%. Yep, not good enough anymore. You got to go to 5%. Most of them have been letting America carry the weight for 20 years. Okay, America first does not mean America alone. All these other countries just need to carry their fair burden, and 5% is the new standard.
All right, so there's a number we need to watch. Retired Army Colonel John Mills, name of the book, War Against the Deep State. Colonel Mills, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. And Steve Bannon is in your area right now,
yeah,
right?
He's a little indisposed, but yeah, as the crow flies, that's about 30 miles from here. So if I see him, I'll give him your regards. How's that?
Everybody pray and think about Steve as he's going through this absolutely unlawful incarceration.
All right. Colonel, thank you. Got a scoot. Thank you, sir.
You bet, Paul.
Take care.
Bye.
There you go. Name of the book, War Against the Deep State. Retired Army Colonel John Mills. He's a former director of cybersecurity policy, strategy, and international affairs at the Department of Defense, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. Dan Haar is with us, Hearst Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Good. I thought you didn't believe in public assistance. Well, that's good.
In select sequences, Dan, I'm going to select the situations, right? I can go with that.
That's the way of one of the parties, yes.
Absolutely. Well, there's airport. There always seems to be, Dan, some airport news and airline news. So what do we hear with Bradley going on?
Yeah, this is it's big and it's unusual in a lot of ways. There are 7 new routes out of Bradley from Avelo, and we shouldn't call it Avelo. It's Avelo.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 7 new routes, and one of them is new to Cancun, I believe. One of them is new to Montego Bay, Jamaica.
Nice.
If this sounds familiar to you,
yeah.
We went through this 2 years ago.
With them or a different airline? When was it 2 years ago?
Spirit.
Oh, that's
Spirit
right.
Airlines.
I forgot about that.
Right,
yeah.
And I have to tell you, the same people were there giving the same speeches. This time it was at the state capitol because I think last time it didn't work out for Spirit, so
yeah.
They moved it from Bradley to the state capitol. But but in any case, you know, obviously it's been very difficult to have international routes work at Bradley. There's no secret about that. And the state does and must subsidize the routes. This is a revenue guarantee of $2 million, I think, over the first year or two.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean the state is giving them $2 million. It's a revenue floor. And so Avelo, my one and only question at the press conference was, is this now that you've got, I don't know, 10 routes, whatever it is, 12,
mm-hmm.
from Tweed, and now these 7 from Bradley. And by the way, I should say the 5 non-international, the 5 domestic routes from Bradley
mm-hmm.
are the same as the 5 routes, as 5 of the routes that they already have in Tweed.
Wow.
So they are essentially competing against them. Not essentially, they are competing against themselves between Bradley and Tweed, which is, some people might say that that's unwise, because I, for example, flew out of Tweed to go to Baltimore, Washington a couple of months ago. And, you know, now I would fly out of Bradley. So it's, you know, I'm not flying twice. So it's an interesting dynamic. But let me get to the answer that the CEO gave.
Yeah.
When I asked the question, my question was, does this mean you'll now be on Expedia? And of course, your listeners know that Travelocity is now part of Expedia.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's the airline consolidation industry is consolidating. So the ticket consolidation industry is consolidating. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, you probably will get somewhat less good deals now. But in any case, he was adamant. We are never. That's not our business model. We are not selling tickets through Expedia. And that's a way to not make this work. And he was absolutely adamant, right? Because, of course, Expedia, needless to say, takes a cut.
Sure.
I don't know what the cut is, but takes a cut of the price, right? And you can go, as you well know, to any airline site and get the same deal that's on Expedia. That wasn't always the case, right? I think that originally Expedia was a repackager, a dumper, you know, when airlines were dumping tickets and didn't want to dump tickets through their own site. But things have gotten more sophisticated. And so now they aren't dumping tickets through Expedia. They're just simply selling. And it's a long way of saying that this, when Andrew Levy, the CEO of Avelo and founder, says that this is a different kind of airline in answer to our questions, how are you going to make this work when all the other airlines haven't? Maybe he's right.
So it's interesting, Dan, because I'm thinking of the situation here and what you're saying. Now, it didn't work previously. You said the state, there's a guarantee of $2 million. Is part of this deal just getting people, more people from Avelo and the state to use Bradley, maybe an evening off the volume that comes out of Tweed? Is this the kind of dynamic that, all right, we're not going to make a boatload of money off here, but let's just get people, you know, into Bradley for the parking and the rental cars and the, you know,
no,
and the,
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, this is the airline's business. This isn't. This is the state is willing to go along and make things happen.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
It isn't that the state is making money. From the state standpoint, the benefit here is economic development and population development. That is, if you have more nonstops, more people want to come there, both businesses and residents. Right. If you were to pick up and move to a place right now, you would care whether whatever the nearby airport is had flights nonstop to where you might want to go. And since you don't know where you might want to go, the more nonstops, the better.
Sure.
So the state's benefit is in having an airport that's more robust. I don't think the state is looking to make money ever on concessions and that kind of thing.
Okay. Ned Lamont, before we get to Kamala Harris and the national stuff, Governor Lamont in Germany, I guess, what, to glad hand Dan and to drum up business? What's the aim here?
Yeah, and my colleague who was there, she wasn't in Germany, who was at the press conference, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, the days all blend together. The sort of money quote was from not the governor, but from O'Keefe, the CEO, the DECD commissioner, Dan O'Keefe, Daniel officially, Dan in person, like a lot of us. And he said, Connecticut is an oasis of stability, right?
Yeah.
And the takeaway point here is not Germany versus Israel versus Brazil versus this country or that country.
Yeah.
It's that it is notable that Connecticut is selling itself as an oasis of stability after so many years of instability financially.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that it's not only that we're seeing stability fiscally and financially and in other ways, it's that it's being sold as an oasis of stability, right? Which is – that's quite a thing because the Germans are, according to Lamont and Dan O'Keefe, and I have no reason to doubt it, concerned when they see the Republican convention platform essentially say we're going to let Ukraine fight its own war.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not something that they want to hear in Germany.
No. Right? It's interesting. Although I love the word oasis here, as opposed to, as I said on my show the other day, when the revenue figures came out, I said, hey, folks, it wasn't that long ago. What was that phrase, Dan, that Ben Barnes used to use? We're in a constant state of whatever he said, fiscal emergency or something like that. But yeah, now we're in oasis.
It was 2014. It was the... Yeah. The perennial fiscal. How could I have forgotten the word?
Times. But so now we're in oasis, which is good. I like that. It's got to be good, right?
Well, it is, and don't worry. The oasis is going to have a little bit of turmoil starting January 3rd, because we don't have to talk about it today. We have 6 months to talk about it, and then some, and then 5 months after that.
Yeah.
But this is going to be an extremely difficult budget year, because the governor and the legislature went ahead and spent $300 to $400 million of one-time money on operations, knowing full well that next year they're going to have to either break the spending cap or find some way to get money under the spending cap. So
yeah.
It ain't going to look like an oasis starting in January, but that's January's problem.
Yeah, and on the national scene, Dan, two and a half weeks ago, it was a race that Donald Trump was probably going to win. They're talking about him carrying six or all seven of the so-called swing states. Now it's been flipped on its ear, and we're waiting for Kamala Harris's VP nod here, although it's not official. It looks that way at the convention. And, man, this is going to be one for the history books, I think, no matter who wins, Dan, and no matter how that happens.
Who do you think it will be, the vice president?
Mark Kelly or Josh Shapiro? Now, I'm reading something in Politico here that says Kelly has the inside scoop. I find it interesting that apparently the shortlist does not include Andy Beshear, but maybe they figure, Dan, it's a red state, we're not going to win in Kentucky. So I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's got to be Kelly, because Kelly gives you Arizona's 11 mm-hmm. electoral votes.
Yep.
And while Pennsylvania's 20 electoral votes are more, Kelly gives you blue chip. No, I mean blue chip. Like, what's better than blue? What color chip is better than blue?
Yeah, right.
Military service, right? And so Mark Kelly, and Mark Kelly alone.
Yeah.
A, he's a bulldog, right? And it's always good to have a bulldog.
Former astronaut. Yeah. You can't beat that. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It's an astronaut. It's the military. And so, what better person than that to neutralize the Republicans' military USA nationalist claims that we are the party of the strong military? Well, guess what? No, you're not. Not while Mark Kelly's in the room. And I get that. Listen, J.D. Vance served in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
There's no taking it away. It's not that it's, it's not.
Sure.
It's not all one way, but I don't think there's any question that having the strongest voice possible,
mm-hmm.
and Shapiro is not an unstrong voice, but he's popular regionally. Mark Kelly has a national profile.
Yeah, good point. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor. Dan, take care. Have a wonderful week. Be safe in all you're doing. We'll chat next week.
Maybe it'll be a quiet week.
Maybe. Oh, come on, Dad. That's not good for you and I. Come on. We need a little bit of juice. Come on. All right. We'll see you next week, my friend.
We'll get something going.
Take care. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. There you go.